will inflate this rain report for October 17th, 2009 in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. From the Radio Amateur Information Network, this is the Rain Report. From a place where very chilly temps and rain has been the norm the past week. No, not Seattle. I'm talking about Chicago. This is the Rain Report. I'm Dwayne Whittingham, N9SSN. Last week, we brought you part one of Bill Brown, WB8ELK's story as to how he became the foremost amateur radio balloon specialist in America. If you missed it, you can listen to part one again on the Rain Archive page, which will be spruced up a little later this weekend. Bill left us with a question that will lead us into the concluding portion of Hap Holly, KCNRP's interview with him. Here again is the scenario from Bill.
One day, the custodian who swept up the sidewalk came to me and says, "Bill, there's this black powder that shows up on my sidewalk every morning, and I have to sweep it up. The whole sidewalk is black." And he handed me a vial of black powder. He says, "Can you analyze this?" So I took it in and ran it through all my analysis equipment, and I just about keeled over laughing. Keep in mind that we're one block from the 210 freeway through Pasadena, and a million cars a day drive down that freeway. It was tire rubber, enough to cover a sidewalk, just from a million cars a day driving nearby. That's the kind of pollution you get from that kind of a situation. I got kind of tired of working that kind of job, and I thought my one true love has always been electrical engineering from UC Santa Barbara, and I went and got my master's in EE then.
And what year did you obtain your master's in?
1980. We did all kinds of neat stuff. I participated in the Rose Parade. Amateur radio stations would be set up along the Rose Parade route in Pasadena, and they had amateur television links on every building. One of the people, Tom O'Hara, W6ORG, had a helicopter, and it was from the Magnum PI show. He was able to purchase that helicopter when the show went away, and he was flying that all over the parade route with a camera and with 2-meter FM to coordinate the floats from above. It's just an amazing coordination of how these stations talk to each other, and they were able to produce video views all the way back to the command center, and they just loved that kind of a situation. This is way before the days of cell phone cameras and the internet.
Well, we're up to 1980. We're getting there.
Well, I hopped over the country at that point. I went up to San Francisco, and I was involved with the amateur television group at Mount Diablo Mountain above California. When you put any kind of repeater, or whether it's audio or visual, and you put it on top of a mountain, you get some pretty good range out of it. I had a ball with that. Did a lot of mountain topping. That's where I really got into UHF and VHF DXing and mountain topping.
How did you get into ham radio ballooning?
I saw a documentary on Joe Kittinger's parachute jump from a balloon that he did in 1962. It was called the Man High Program. It was a way of experimenting with how people will survive in a space environment, and by sending somebody physically into the near vacuum of the stratosphere, it was pretty much the same kind of environmental factors that they had to deal with in space. I saw the movie in the mid-80s. At one point, he jumps out of a gondola at 102,000 feet. And parachutes back to Earth. And they showed a movie of that clip, of this little body falling and falling. It was like a tremendously long free fall. They popped his main parachute out at about 20,000 feet. To this date, it's the longest parachute jump. That took a lot of nerve to do that. And his description of the view from 100,000 feet above the Earth was just like what you see from a spacecraft as an astronaut's view. And that excited me. I says, I've got to experience that myself, but I'm not foolhardy enough to jump out of a balloon at 100,000 feet. I said, there's got to be a way that I can sit in the air-conditioned comfort of my ham shack and witness the same thing and still live afterwards. I came up with the idea of putting a very lightweight television transmitter with a lightweight camera and sending it up on a weather balloon.
How big was the weather balloon?
It was about 10 foot in diameter. It's a fairly standard size. I found that the FAA would send up weather balloons twice a day to study the winds aloft for pilot reports and weather studies. And they did it at 7 in the evening and 7 at night, depending on the time zone change. And the nearest one was in Dayton. And I drove down, knocked on the chain link fence, the guy let me in and he showed me the facility and he walked me through and showed what he used to get the data down, how he inflated the balloon and calculations. So I did a lot of research on it and I came up with my own system, which is now called a balloon sat, which is a balloon satellite. My first flight, I had about 1 ounce of positive lift because I ran out of helium. Miscalculated a little bit. And it barely took off the ground, but it went up to about 60 or 70,000 feet and had a little 1-watt transmitter and ATV with a small computer logo, a graphics screen. And I also had a 2-meter FM beacon, which only put out 1/4 of a watt. And I had a little Morse code ID into the 2-meter FM. All stuff I bought at the Ham Fest, relatively inexpensive. They could see that picture in Chicago at 250 miles away in all directions. There were reports from Canada, Kentucky, Indiana, Illinois, and Michigan.
What did you use for an antenna?
It's called a little wheel. It's a 3-element halo cloverleaf kind of antenna. It's an omnidirectional antenna on 434 megahertz. And for the 2 meters, I just used a vertical whip antenna. The next flight I did after that, I put an actual TV camera in it, and I got live camera video from the edge of space, and you could clearly see the edge of the world and that the world has a slight curve to it. So if it's flat, it's warped a little bit. Then I came up with the idea that you could use the balloon as a relay because you can see 400 miles in all direction at 100,000 feet. You could use the balloon as a repeater. So I did a crossband repeater, came in on 70 centimeters, and came out on 2-meter FM with a little walkie-talkie. It's a little pager receiver that I tuned down to 70 centimeters, and then I had a little 2-meter ICOM 2AT. I flew that, and people over several states could talk to each other using the balloon as a relay. Some people just using HTs on the ground, able to talk to another person with HTs on the ground 400 or 500 miles apart. Antenna height is everything. I also did a simplex repeater. At the time, there was this talking parakeet toy, and the parakeet record what you said and play it back. So I took the inner workings out of the doll and made a simplex repeater out of it.
What year was that?
Early 90s. That started a long career of launching balloon sats all over the country. Now launched in 20 different states.
What is your typical balloon sat launch like today?
Typically, I'll have an experiment from either students from high school, junior high even, or I do college level experiments. We have a variety of things from film cameras, video cameras. We often, to the younger students, I have these little Easter eggs and I let them put whatever experiment they want in the Easter eggs. I call them eggstronauts, like an Easter peep to see if the thing expands and blows up. If you put a live critter in it, make sure it's something that isn't cute and cuddly. They actually get to send an experiment and operate an actual space mission. You're going 20 miles up instead of 200 miles up, but it's a similar environment. The images that they get back on the film cameras, you may have seen two MIT students that sent up a digital camera that was recovered by use of a cell phone sending GPS data. It was covered on all the major networks, CNN and I think ABC covered it. They've been interviewed and people think, wow, that's great. Well, it's taken 22 years for the public to become really aware of this kind of activity. The first time that was done was 22 years ago.
You're listening to the story behind Bill Brown, WB8ELK's rise to becoming amateur radio balloon specialist. We'll bring you Bill's final moments, in this interview anyway, in a flash. This is the Rain Report, being subsidized by Merle Heinlein, KB9NOH. You'll find his bio on QRZ.com. This is the Radio Amateur Information Network, www.therainreport.com.
Is the point at which the weather balloon bursts, is that very consistent?
It's usually about plus or minus a few thousand feet. Fairly reasonably consistent, depending on the size of balloon that you purchase and the amount of helium you put in the balloon. Typically, we get to altitudes between 90 and 105,000 feet. But if you buy a larger, reasonably inexpensive balloons, average cost is about $120 for the larger balloons we fly to carry the student experiments that weigh around 6 pounds for a total of 12 pounds for the whole package. We can't fly anything over 12 pounds without getting an FAA waiver. So I limit each experiment to 6 pounds because that falls into the FAA regulations for flights that don't require a special waiver.
And how cold is it?
It can be 100 degrees on the surface. In the jet streams, it can be 60 below zero. And then the odd thing happens. After you go through the jet stream layer and you get into the actual stratosphere, it starts warming up again. It can get up to a toasty minus 25 at 110,000 feet. One of the things we do is send up a data logger with a temperature sensor, or we'll send that information down live on APRS or telemetry, and we'll plot that. We get the students to plot it on a graph to show altitude versus temperature. And that is a big tool that meteorology folks use for predicting the weather and that kind of thing. It really demonstrates atmospheric science for the students. You probably often wondered, why don't people stow away on the wheel well of a commercial passenger jet? Well, there's two things that are going to get you if you try and do that. And people have tried to do that. One is they won't have enough oxygen to survive. You need oxygen above about 26,000 feet. But even so, it's still about 60 below zero. So you'll run out of air and you'll be frozen solid.
If someone would like to contact you via email, where would they write?
WB8ELK at gmail.com. Whiskey Bravo 8 Echo Lima Kilo at gmail.com. And I also have a website, www.WB8ELK.com. And I'll announce the upcoming balloon flights that I'll be doing on that page. There are a number of amateur radio groups and universities that are putting up balloons that have amateur radio experiments on board. Those of you who would like to participate and follow and track these balloons, they're all announced on a what we call the Amateur Radio High Altitude Balloon website, or ARHAB for short, and it's ARHAB.org. So it's Alpha Radio Hotel Alpha Bravo.org. They'll post announcement of what frequencies are being used. You can always track them on the internet through APRS. On a Google map, we'd love to have as many people participating as possible, particularly when we fly simplex repeaters and crossband voice repeaters. Those are great fun for people to get involved with. And we do plan eventually of flying some AMSAT-style payloads like the SuitSat, which is now called AerisSat. We'll probably be flying some pared-down boards of that with software-defined radio transponders on them. So there'll be plenty of opportunity to use balloons as a relay station for the average ham radio operator. We launch about a couple times a week.
Has a balloon ever been used to serve as a repeater for a very wide area public service event?
Yes, on field day, for example. We sent up a balloon just this last field day, and I encouraged as many other remote field day sites to communicate through our balloon over Huntsville. And we had field day sites in quite a few states in the southeast talking through our balloon and communicating with us at our mission control at the Huntsville Amateur Radio Club. It has been used in civil air patrol activities for a training exercise. We demonstrated it for Kentucky, using it for emergency management communications. And they brought in their EMC vehicles and were operating the balloon to remote locations to use it as a way of emergency or radio communications.
What about a controlled ascent so that the balloon goes up a mile or two and then levels out so that it can be used for hours?
There are ways that we can park a balloon at an altitude for hours at a time. The only problem is the wind aloft will be moving the balloon in some direction or manner away from you. I wrote a program which is now called Balloon Track. Rick Von Glahn in Zero KKZ has rewritten it as a Windows program. It's online as well at nearspaceventures.com. That they've taken that original code and converted to a Perl script, and you can use that online to predict, knowing your ascent rate and your parachute size, you can predict where the balloon is going to go at any given time. The PC version of the program will allow you to predict, add in a float time at a particular altitude. So you get an idea where the winds are going to take you at different altitudes. So you can actually choose an altitude where the winds are going one direction, go up to a higher altitude, you can come right back over your head. And I've had some flights do that, particularly during the summer. They'll go out about 30 miles to the east and they'll come right back over and land almost on my feet. We did one long duration flight about a year ago in the spring. I was able to valve off the helium and park a balloon at 107,000 feet over Tennessee, and it stayed there all night long. At that particular time of the year, the winds were zero in that portion of the stratosphere. At that time, I only had a tracking beacon on it, and I was sending down telemetry on Hellschreiber, Teletype, and Domino EX on 2-meter FM. But I had a simplex repeater or voice relay on it. That would have been a voice repeater that would have covered a several state area all night long. So I've got a valve system that I'm working to perfect now to do those on that kind of long duration flights, just for that reason, to do wide area public communications.
And that's the story behind Bill Brown, WB8ELK's becoming amateur radio ballooning specialist. He was interviewed by RAIN's founder and producer, Hap Holly, KC9RP, at the 28th Annual Tapper ARRL Digital Communications Conference held in suburban Chicago this past month. You'll find Bill's web and email addresses on the site's mentioned page on www.therainreport.com. The RAIN Report is copyright 1990 through 2009 RAIN, all rights reserved. I'm Dwayne Whittingham, N9SSN, bidding you all a very 73 from all of us at the Radio Amateur Information Network, www.therainreport.com.